Welcome, everybody. Welcome to Inking Out Legendarium.
Yeah.
So it's another Wheel of Time episode. It's me. I'm Craig. I'm here with Drew. Hi, Drew.
How's it going?
I guess I kind of just seized the reins of this thing, but if you could just as easily be hosting this, I suppose. Drew, of course, from the Inking Out Loud podcast. I am with the Legendarium. Drew, this is our major shared passion, the Wheel of Time. Okay, and so we're doing this joint episode because, well, it must be done.
It right? must. So. It really must.
So we aren't doing this on every single episode because I think that it gets a little bit overwhelming for us, for you. I mean, you've got the Dusty Wheel, you've got Daniel Green, you've got other people doing the kind of blow by blow deep dives every episode. We're not really doing that. We just kind of want to jump in every so often and give our thoughts on these TV episodes, right?
Yeah, everybody needs to know our opinions.
It's true. You know, I've been meaning to talk to you about the recent Supreme Court decision about... just kidding. Okay. Yeah. Not those kinds of decisions.
No.
Nobody cares about
Wheel
those
of Time opinions.
Exactly. So okay. We are now 5 episodes in. What was this episode called? Do you recall?
Blood Calls Blood.
Blood Calls Blood. Oh,
yes.
My.
Which okay. was a chapter title in Book 2, The Great Hunt.
And, okay, so that's a good reminder for me to say, all right, obviously we're going to be spoiling the show up through episode 5, but we're also going to assume that you have read at least the first 3 Wheel of Time books.
Yeah.
Okay? So
yeah.
So you've been warned. You don't have to have read the whole series. We're not going to give away the ending or anything, but just, yeah, the show is kind of melding together these first 3 books. Right now, it's kind of the first 2 in large measure, but I'm told that we'll weave in a few things from book 3. So anyway,
yeah.
My point just being, want to make sure that we don't ruin anybody's day with that sort
yeah,
of stuff.
Yeah, like the overall plot so far, in as much as it has followed the books, has pretty much covered book 1, but there have been some scenes and conversations from book 2 that they've kind of pulled in. And I have a sneaking suspicion about our first like big plot point from book 2 will show up in the next episode, but yeah, you know, they announced before the season ever released that there would be elements of the first 3 books in season 1, so we figure that's pretty much fair game for this kind of conversation.
Right now. I'm curious to get your take on this. I'm a big fan of the book, but to say that you and I are big fans of the book is like saying that, you know, I go out jogging a couple times a week, so Usain Bolt and I are both runners. You know, like it's so it's not quite the same. So I'm curious to get your take on how it has been for you, this mashing together of storylines. You know, obviously they got to cut some stuff out, but they're also scrunching some stuff together. So, for instance, in this episode, we meet Loial. I always just learned it as Loial, but Loial, son of Harant, son of Haman,
yep.
Whatever his name is. And he, in the book, shows up in Camelin. We completely skip Camelin and show up at the White Tower. I was grateful to hear in this episode mention of Camelin. So
yeah.
Okay, so great, the city does exist, we're not completely skipping over it existing in this, but yeah, what are your thoughts on kind of that scrunching together of stuff where okay, well, we got to meet Loial, let's just do it in Tar Valon.
Mostly I think it has worked so far. I think the best instance of it was Breen Spring, where they combined 3 or 4 different locations from Matt and
right.
Rand's storyline into one location. And that was one of the strongest sequences of the whole show so far, in my opinion. The bit with Tar Valon in episode 5, where we meet Loial and it's in not the Queen's Blessing in Camelin, but it's more or less
right.
the same scene as when Rand, you know, wanders into the library there.
Right. Just fewer cats and no Master Guild.
Yeah. I think it works really well. Honestly, the Rand and Loial bits in this episode were probably my favorite.
Really? Interesting. Yeah. Okay, why is that?
I feel like they've been really lightly doling out Rand and Matt through five episodes. The lion's share has been on Warrain and Lan and by extension, Nynaeve. And that makes sense. Look, you know, Rosamund Pike is the big name. This is
sure
what they have to do to drive the show early on and then let the younger actors and actresses come into their own.
Right.
But I'm just so much more engaged with Matt's storyline, especially, and now Rand's is getting a little interesting. We finally get the overt hint about his Aiel heritage. You know, they're
right.
The mysteries with Rand and Matt, I think, are the most compelling right now.
So, so you enjoy the Rand storyline the most, or the Rand Loial scenes the most? Is that because of the hints at the lore, the hints at future stuff that you're getting? Because I gotta say, I wasn't thrilled with the portrayal of Loial. Not the actor. The actor's fine. He's doing what he's told. He's turning in a great performance. That's not what I'm saying. But the kind of the character design, the costuming, it's all a bit like, I don't know, silly. This show has had a few mildly cheesy moments, and I'm more than happy to forgive those. Because you know, cheesy can be good sometimes. It can be fun sometimes, but. But the Loial scenes seemed a little silly to me, where this show has so far taken itself so seriously that it felt really out of place. So my question is, was it the scenes for their own sake, or was it the scenes for what they're promising to do with the show going forward?
The first scene, it was for the scene's sake. The second scene with Loial and Nynaeve, much more for what it's promising. I thought that scene was odd, very abrupt, where it's like, oh, Loial's barging in. Loial's got Nynaeve with him now. Like, oh, here we go. Like, it felt like there was supposed to be another scene of Loial running into Nynaeve in the gardens.
Right.
But I think there are some pretty clear budgetary restrictions going on in this season. I know that's the case with Loial's costuming. They basically said, we just plain do not have the money to have a major character be CGI.
Right.
So they had to kind of do their best with Ahmed, I think his name is.
Right. Something like that.
In terms of practical effects. It's not as bad as I thought it was going to be. I don't love his hair, but it was not as bad as I thought it was going to be.
Okay. Fair enough. Back on the, by the way, I want to get to episode 4. We haven't talked about really episode 4 yet, but I want to get back to that in a moment. But before we get off of the kind of mashing together of storylines and the pacing and everything, there's a fantastic screen grab that Daniel put out, Daniel Green, on his Twitter feed.
Oh, boy.
So if people didn't see this, it was fantastic. So 10 days ago, somebody said, I just want to add my 2 cents on the pacing. I have heard multiple people say that the pacing is quick and they're cramming a lot into these early episodes. I strongly disagree. I think that it being a TV show, remembering what's coming in future seasons, we need to quickly get moving or the newcomers will get bored quickly. Et cetera, et cetera. The entire first book is merely a big setup anyway, and the story doesn't really pick up until Egwene gets to the tower, and Rand does what he does at Falma, et cetera. So this person's like giving real examples and like laying out his case for why he thinks the pacing is okay. And the reply is, you're completely wrong and have terrible taste. This show will be canceled by season 3 and good riddance.
Wow. So somebody actually responded with that?
Yeah. So to which Daniel, he replied, this about perfectly sums up internet discourse around the show, which is so true. It's so true. And this is why, the reason I bring this up is, first of all, I think that's just a really funny exchange. But second of all, this is why I'm glad that I have been watching the show with Sarah, with my wife, because she's never read these books. She's only kind of heard me talk about them in passing. She doesn't really know anything about them. And so she does know that our Wi-Fi password references one of these characters. Yeah. I won't say which one, and now I have to change my Wi-Fi password. But anyway, so she gets little tidbits, but it's been really fun to watch her pick up on little things and just try to enjoy the show for itself and not for its quote unquote pacing, you know?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. And that's been one of my favorite things with this whole experience so far, is seeing non-readers interacting with the story and trying to figure out where it's going. And I've seen some of the most entertaining theory posts online that I've seen in over a decade, you know.
Right.
There was a Reddit post where this person and their group of friends are doing a Bayesian projection to try to figure out the odds on who's the dragon. And it was this, like, you know, probably 5,000 word breakdown through the first four episodes. So I was like, I am here for this, you know.
That's so much fun. Oh, it's so much fun.
Yeah.
I will say they're taking more liberties story wise than you got in the ultimate fantasy adaptation, which is of course the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
The Lord of the Rings took a few liberties, sure, but generally speaking, like, it followed the story pretty closely. This one definitely does not do that, right? It's taking a lot of these liberties as far as where things happen, who they happen to, in what order you learn about them, all that sort of thing. And I'm loving having a different version of the Wheel of Time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need this to be a one-to-one. So yeah, I'm really enjoying it myself.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think it's a better viewing experience for me not knowing what every scene is going to be. And
right.
I think in some ways it's helping tell a stronger story, because the writers have the benefit of the entire series of lore at this point. Whereas when Robert Jordan was writing the first book, very obviously there were elements of the world he hadn't finished fleshing out yet. And then on top of that, because of the rather limited point of view, we really only get two point of view characters in the first book. And I won't say, you know, who for the...
So who's the dragon? Oh, I don't know. Yeah, who's the dragon?
Very obvious who the dragon is in the books.
Right.
But because of that, and because these point of view characters are so limited in terms of their knowledge of the world, Robert Jordan was able to develop the world as he went along rather than have to have it all laid out. But since we have this greater focus on Moiraine and Lan here, it's giving the writers a really cool opportunity to build a wider foundation for the world from the get-go.
Which it presents its own challenges, not just for the writers, but for the viewers as well. I've found it very interesting. Sorry, sticking on episode 5, we'll get back to four in just a bit. But I've found it very interesting how much time we're spending on the warders.
Yeah.
Where that's not something we get glimpses of it, especially in book 2. Is that the quarterstaff scene? Is that book 3?
But there are a couple of scenes in book 2 as well where we kind of see some of the warders in training.
Right. Point being, we don't learn a ton about the warders and Aes Sedai politics and whatnot until we get further along in the story. But in this, it's like episode 5 is at least 50% dedicated to just Aes Sedai and warder politics and culture. So very, very interesting how they're doing that. And, you know, I just finished watching this episode with Sarah. And I think that's one of the things she's more interested in. It's like, what's going on with these people? The thing she's most interested in is the kind of the theology behind all of this. Like, what's up with the reincarnation and how does reincarnation work? So wait, you're the dragon reborn, but there still exists the old dragon in some plane of existence. Like, hey, you know, it's all very trippy, very weird. And I know she's interested in that. So
yeah, watch and find out.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. By the way, did you know that, let's see, so we're recording this on December 2nd.
Yeah.
And the Wheel of Time was the number one streamed show from November 19th to the 27th. So kind of over, according to Rotten Tomatoes. I think the sheer numbers, it was number two behind,
Hawkeye.
What's it? Yeah, that guy with the bow and arrow, Hawkeye. So Hawkeye was number one in terms of viewership, but in terms of, audience and critic scores, I guess, Wheel of Time takes the number one spot. Nice. So there you go. Yeah. And that's, I think, so I bring that up because that was, like I said, last week. And so that's based on the strength of episode 4. Okay, let's talk about episode 4 because in my mind, that's the strongest one so far that we've had. What about you?
Yes, I definitely agree. And it's interesting because that one is the greatest departure from the book. I think there are really only two scenes in episode 4 that I can think of that really hit, stuff in the book. And it's like Perrin and Egwene with the Tinkers. You know, Rand and Matt and Tom, their storyline's different. Again, there's some combinations going on there. And then, not that they're bad scenes with them. In fact, I quite liked the Rand and Matt and Tom scenes, but the massive bulk of the episode is focused again on the Aes Sedai and the Warders and Nynaeve and Logan. Right. And none of that is in the book.
Well, and it all happens off screen, right? This, the capturing of Logan, the war in Gael'dan, like that all happens. Uh-huh. It's off screen.
And
right?
And Logan doesn't get gentled until after he is brought to the tower in the books.
Right. Right.
And of course, Moiraine and Lan are never involved with the capture of Logan. You know, they really made some changes there, but I think they were very strong changes. I love giving Logan more screen time. He's a great character. They got a fantastic actor to.
I was just going to say, I really like this guy.
He's great at both the, you know, the air of menace and authority and great at the madness.
Right. He kind of has that crazily playful look about him sometimes. I don't know. So, I don't know quite how to describe it, but yeah, I like him a lot. Apparently he's huge in Latin America.
I've heard from some friends down in South America that like he's the reason everybody in South America is watching Wheel Time.
Right. So yeah, he's doing great. I've liked him a lot. Okay. So where do we go from here? Episode 4. Yes, it's a big departure, but just so not thinking of it in terms of adaptation, but just thinking of it in terms of TV, I think it's the best episode so far. And that is probably because of the strength of the performances of the Aes Sedai and Warder characters. We spend so much time with them, and this is a really great supporting cast. We've got Stepan.
Yeah, he's
Stepan,
great.
Stepan, like, he's really good. So he's Karini's Warder, and then we've got Alana's Warders. They're fun. She's great, by the way. Alana, the Indian actress.
Priyanka Bose, something like that.
Right. Yeah. I don't know if she's Indian or Pakistani. I assume Indian, but I'm not sure. Anyway, and then the woman who plays Karini, by the way, the moment, and I mean the second she appeared on screen, she was my immediate headcanon for Essen from the fifth season. So people who have read that will know what I'm talking about. And I'm sure I'm going to get a bunch of like, oh yeah, absolutely's on Discord. There's probably going to be a lot of no, you're crazies on there. But it was like visceral and immediate. I was like, I need this woman to be cast in a fifth season adaptation now. So anyway, there's your tangent for the
I think you're spot on. Some of the scenes in the camp, and not even necessarily the big action scenes, but the quieter moments were excellently acted. The scene around the campfire was top tier. I was completely entertained by that. And
that scene, really, really quick, let me just say, of all the comparisons to Game of Thrones, like there's the one we talked about, the sheep and the, the form of the dragon's fang and all that stuff. Like there are some really, really overt things, but that scene in particular is the one that has reminded me the most of Game of Thrones, where it's characters sitting around talking and it's consequential. It means something. It's engaging. Like you're getting something out of the scene. It's not just filling time. Game of Thrones was really, really good at that. Yeah. Like just, I guess at the time, like, especially in the first season, it's like, oh, we don't have the budget for, giant, sweeping travel log stuff. So we'll just have people sit in a room and talk about it, but they're so good at talking about it that you just can't help but want to watch. Anyway, that's what that scene around the campfire did for me.
Yeah, definitely. And it gave some of these, really talented supporting actors time to show their chops off. They're not just there to swing a sword and, punch some dudes. Like they're really there to be meaningful characters. And that is something that the show has to do well if it's going to properly, be a success in terms of just TV, but also be a successful adaptation of the books, because one of the greatest strengths of the Wheel of Time is the supporting cast. And even though many of these characters are not... sorry, my cat's going a little crazy in the background here. Even though many of these characters so far are not the fan favorite side characters from the books, they're very quickly becoming fan favorite side characters in the show.
Like Stepan. Like Stepan. Stepan? Is it Stepan or Stepan?
Stepan.
I'm going to call him Steppenwolf.
Yeah.
Because he kind of has a wolfish look about him. So I'm going with Steppenwolf.
R.I.P., buddy.
Oh, man. So, yeah, we lose him in episode 5. It's a good thing we gave that spoiler alert.
Yeah.
I will say, okay, so jumping back to episode 5, okay, now that we've had this so-called, so to speak, bonding time with the Aes Sedai and the Warders in episode 4, now we get to episode 5 where we get to see the depth of their bond, and Stepan can't take the death of Kareni, and so he kills himself. And the episode ends on a scene, kind of his funeral scene, and everybody's standing around him wearing white, and Lan kneels down, puts his hand on Stepan's chest, and everybody else is kind of pounding their chest rhythmically, and he lets out this howl of pain, right? And if you were to describe that scene to me and tell me, here's what we're going to have them do, here's how they're going to grieve for Stepan, and this is what the scene is going to look like, I would think to myself, that's nope, pass. It's too cheesy. It's not going to come off visually, whatever. But it worked for me. It actually was really, I thought it was kind of touching. It worked for me. What about you?
Yeah, it definitely worked for me. It was in the back of my head the whole time about how many book readers are going to get up in arms because Lan is showing emotion, but... Look, I don't care. It was a good scene. there are things that they have to do on TV that, to establish a connection between the viewer and the characters. And this is one of those things. If Lan really were as just completely dour and stone-faced as he is in the books, people wouldn't really like him.
Right.
And I think this scene was really nice. I like that we're getting to see more ritual involved with the White Tower. We get
the melting of the ring.
Yeah, the melting of the ring. We get Stepan doing some sort of like ritual warding against the Forsaken. You know, we get this warder funeral rite. None of this stuff is in the books, but it works. It really fits with the aesthetic. It fits with the story that they're going for on the show. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was compelling TV.
Yeah, no, I agree. So let's talk about which characters we do find compelling. And I don't necessarily want to do this in relation to the books. I think we can do that all day.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you're saying, Lan has changed a little bit. I find Lan very compelling in this. But the character I want to ask you about is Rand. So watching it with my wife, and I know there are people on Discord who are saying, you know, we want to know how Sarah's journey is. So I'm trying to give you a little window into it without speaking for her too much. But she, so I mentioned after you and I and Ryan and Lauren watched the first three episodes, I mentioned that I really like Yosha as Rand. And I hold to that. I still think that's the case. But from Sarah's perspective, she's like, I don't know, he's just kind of boring. He's not expressive. He's not interesting. For her, it's all about Matt as like the best performance, right? But I want to talk about Rand, about Yosha, and how you're enjoying his portrayal of Rand. If you think it's too wooden, if you are enjoying it. I will say that part of the reason I enjoy it so much is because I know Rand from the books.
Yes.
And I feel like, you know what? He's kind of nailing this vanilla milquetoast, farm boy. Cause that's what I know him as. But as somebody who doesn't know who he is he too boring compared to the other characters, compared to somebody like Nynaeve?
It's like you said, it's really tough to divorce myself from what I know of his journey in the books, because I do really like Rand and I want more of him on the screen. But if I'm trying to put aside my knowledge of his character, I can definitely see how some viewers would be left wanting. As I noted, like he hasn't really gotten to do a whole lot yet.
Right. That's what I'm thinking too.
It's a lot of setup, you know, like Perrin and Egwene similarly, it's just a lot of setup for what's to come. Like Rand and Egwene, I think are parallels. Perrin's gotten to do some interesting stuff and Egwene finally got to do some interesting stuff in this episode.
I think that about Perrin as well. Like he's been completely boring up to this point. But
and to be honest, I want the wolves to be a little more wolfy. They feel very dog-y.
Real question, how many wolves have you seen? Like in the wild, how many wolves have you encountered? Real wolves?
Zero. Wolves have only recently been reintroduced to Colorado. They were not present in Colorado for a long, long time.
Right. Because these wolves on the show are quite wolfy. So wolves are quite dog-like.
Yeah. I just mean kind of in their. I don't know how to put it.
Do you want them to be more vicious? More what? Wild?
Yeah, like they look really well groomed. I would say that.
Okay, like no,
they all
fair.
Just had baths, you know. maybe more wild is the right term for it. But yeah, so in this episode, like Egwene and Perrin had some real, you know, stuff to go through. Which, you know, the White Cloaks are another conversation.
They're much
more antagonistic in this one than they are in the books, in the first book certainly.
Right.
again, they've changed a little bit of that sequence. No Child by R, for instance. And I was surprised that we didn't get any more of Captain Bornhold in this season, that they just like sent him off in episode two.
Right. I will say this. You're surprised that they sent him off, but my defense for that would be, I was sitting here thinking during episode five, like, okay, so we're following Rand and Matt and Perrin and Egwene and Nynaeve and Moiraine and Lan. And now we, you know, after episode four, we've got several Aes Sedai to keep track of, plus all their warders. And nobody could be expected to maintain all their names, you know, like non-book readers. But at least by sight, it's like, oh, that's right. Okay. That's a lot of people to keep track of. Now we've got the Tuatha on. And now there's the White Cloaks and there's the different factions in the White Cloaks. And like, it's getting to be a lot already in five episodes. And I'm sitting there as a book reader, I'm like, oh no. Like, are people going to be okay with this? And so I'm okay with them sending off Bornhold and just like consolidating the White Cloaks down to the Questioners, like mm-hmm. the most interesting and menacing part of the White Cloaks. So yeah, I'm cool with it.
Yeah, I'm mostly okay with it. I'm just a little surprised by it. The breakout with them was very straightforward. Whereas in the book, it's a little more complicated. We get to see right. more of the attitudes, the differing attitudes of the White Cloaks during those scenes.
Right.
But anyway, so this idea of Rand in particular being a little bland, I totally see it. I don't think so, because I think he's nailing what he's supposed to be doing as an actor.
Yeah.
But for somebody who doesn't have that knowledge, yeah. And I think we're going to need to do something with Rand soon to get the viewers hooked. You know, I feel like they've been sort of steadily doling out important scenes to each of the Emundsfield Five. And Rand is kind of the next one up.
Right.
So I'm...
Or is he? Because they're setting it up for Matt's exorcism, right?
I'm curious whether they're going to play that as it is in the books, or if they're just going to be over and done with in the show. Where?
What do you mean?
So Matt doesn't get fully healed of the dagger until book three.
Right.
But he has two kind of minor healings, one in book one and one in book two.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm curious to see if there's going to be some sort of thing with Nynaeve, maybe minor healing him, or if he's going to get brought to the tower next episode and we're going to get the full healing scene with the Amyrlin and everything.
That's my prediction. Yeah. That's what I think we're going to get. But then again, I didn't think there was going to be an intro sequence in the second episode. Yeah. So what do I know? What do I know?
Still a big fan of those opening credits, by the way.
I'm a big fan of the opening credits, except for the thread snapping at the very, very beginning. I don't like that, but I like the rest of it.
Okay. So,
I don't know. I don't know why. It just, it's weird. Okay. What else do we need to talk about? Is there anything we missed? Like with Loghain and episode four?
Yeah, so episode four and a little bit into episode five. How do you feel they're handling the mystery of the dragon?
I'm loving it. I'm enjoying it. And I gather, like, I think Sarah knows who it is. Like, she knows who I have mentioned, you know, from sure. the books and all that. Like, but even she is like, well, I don't know, but they're making a pretty strong case for, you know, X, Y, or Z. Like, in this episode, in episode five, they make a point of having Matt and Loghain have a fake
yes.
moment. Loghain doesn't know they're having a moment, but Matt sure does, you know. And so they're making it look like, oh, the false dragon has recognized the real dragon. So, you know, it's those little moments like that that make me really cheer on the show. And I think I mentioned this in our first three episodes discussion, where this is something that the book didn't capitalize on that I wish, and I think I commented on it at the time. I wish it had. I wish it had been more of a mystery in the book. And so I'm loving how they're doing it in the show. What about
you? I have a huge grin on my face right now. I think it's probably the smartest thing they've done in the show.
I mean, like you said, the online theories are a delight and a wonder.
The way they're seeding in little things to be like, this person's special. Oh, but this person's special. Ah, and this third person. Like, and they just layer them on and on and on. And like, seeing some of, you know, the non-book readers who don't know what's going on with Matt, they're like, a lot of people think he can channel and he's actually going mad. A lot of people are like, well, I'm not sure. Maybe it is, but also it kind of looked like that shadow stuff from the one city, and like,
right.
And there's still the open question. I'd say partially open question of, was Matt partially or wholly responsible for the deaths of the Grinwells? You know, there's just, I love it.
Yeah, no, I'm enjoying all of that as well. Oh shoot, you reminded me of something, and now it's gone. It's gone forever, Drew. It's who knows. It was probably genius though. So
likely, yeah. Lost to the skimming void.
I do wonder when we're going to get Tom back. I like the actor who plays Tom quite a lot.
That's got to be a season two thing. It's got to be season two.
You think so?
I hope so.
Okay. Yeah. All right. All right. Well, what else do we have to talk about? Or should we call it good there at 36 minutes? Hey,
I think that's about everything I had to talk about. One last remark. The action sequences in episode 4, especially the channeling, way better than episode 1.
Okay.
Way better.
All right. So the battle in the woods with the grenades, the power grenades. Yeah. And whatnot. I did like when Alana turned the arrows back on the army. Yes. That was cool.
So that scene, or the start of that scene, was in the very first teaser trailer. And I thought it looked cheesy as hell. The kind of point of view of the arrows coming in.
Of the arrows.
And I was like, oh no, this does not look great. And then in the actual show, with the context of the scene and then how she turns him around, I was like, okay, that was actually really nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I've got one last thing before we cut and run. Are you happy with the development of the Lan Nynaeve relationship, i.e. that there is one?
Yes. That was very necessary.
I'm a huge fan of the books. I know you are as well, but being a huge fan of the books doesn't mean you have to think that there's no room for improvement.
Yeah.
And that was a giant hole waiting to be filled.
Yeah.
And so developing that relationship, bravo. Thank you very much. There can be various opinions on whether they're doing that well, whether it's believable that their relationship is developing the way it is. That's fine. I'm just glad they're doing
No, I think the two actors have great chemistry. So
now after 5 episodes, we'll make this our parting thoughts. Who is your standout? Has it changed since episode 3? Or is it the same?
I think I said Yosha was my standout, but don't quote me on that because it was like 3 a.m.
I know I said that. I said that.
I think I agreed with you. Now, definitely Barney. Definitely Matt.
There's no contest here as far as I'm concerned. As far as somebody turning in a performance for this show, Barney Harris.
And it is a massive bummer that we only get him for one season.
I had to warn my wife because she kept bringing it up. She's like, he's so good compared to everybody else. Like his performance is so good. And I was like, I agree. Don't get attacked.
some big
hopefully the next guy. Yeah. For those, I guess, for those who don't know, it's possible that some listening don't know, Barney Harris has been recast, or Matt has been mm-hmm. recast. Barney Harris will not be rejoining the cast for season two for reasons. Yeah. For reasons that I've heard rumors of, but I'm not going to get into mm-hmm. it. So, I wish him all the best, and I hope he finds amazing roles in the future because he seems incredibly talented.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Definitely a big bummer. I hope Donald Finn, I think is the name of the replacement. I hope he can step right in. So.
Yeah, he's a talented dude. So we'll give him the benefit of the doubt. But anyway, yeah, he's been a delight. Barney Harris has been a delight in season one. So, all right, Drew, shall we?
Let's do it.
All right, so we're gonna wrap it up for tonight. It's kind of half the Legendarium, so I don't have any final drafts here. But Drew, I was not prepared.
Sure.
Just making sure we didn't miss anything. So I will just remind everybody to go to Discord. Not only can you go join the Legendarium's Discord, but you can join the Inking Out Loud Discord as well. I know you guys have a lot of fun over there. But Drew, you're on the Legendarium Discord, so people can find you in both places. And let's see. So you go to thelegendarium.com. You can find links to the Discord server. You can find links to past episodes, including our 34 episodes on the Wheel of Time that we did 3-4 years ago. That's one of the highlights of the Legendarium for me so far was our Wheel of Time series. So please go check that out if you are reading the books or if you have read the books. And then what else was I going to say? Oh, Patreon. You can find that at thelegendarium.com. And Drew, you guys can be found at
iwillpodcast.com. We also have covered all of the Wheel of Time. I believe we did 33 episodes on it. We have not done New Spring, so it'll be 34 when we get there. although I believe our runtime is quite a bit longer than the Legendarium.
I do not doubt that one tiny bit.
We've had a couple of multi-hour episodes in there. As well, Patreon for us. You can find us at patreon.com/inkingoutloud and follow us on Twitter or Facebook. I know the Patreon or the Discord link is in both of those places. I'm actually not sure if we've updated our website to include the Discord link. It's still a relatively new development for us. So, and I've been a bit busy being out in Utah lately. So
That's true. All right. Well, everybody, thank you so much for listening. We'll be back in a couple of weeks. We're not going to do this, like I said, every single week, but we'll be back after episode 7, I believe.
Yes.
So we'll do a 6 and 7 discussion, and then we'll do a final wrap up after episode 8 comes out. So look forward to those. Make sure you subscribe, et cetera, et cetera. Do all the things, click all the buttons, like and subscribe. I'm an internet whore, whatever. I don't care. So Drew, good to talk to you.
Yeah.
And I'll see you next time.
Sounds good.